Welcome to the Leap Health Workplace Podcast. Here we explore innovative, proven health and wellbeing solutions to drive your performance and productivity. Leap Health empowers individuals and organisations to prioritise their health and wellbeing as a catalyst to performance and productivity. We do this by providing workplace health and wellbeing performance workshops and also the Leap 360 one-to-one leadership coaching to drive health, wellbeing and performance, powered by the Game Changer Index Energy for Impact Profiling Tool. And we offer bespoke corporate programs to ignite proactivity in ownership at all levels of health and wellbeing as a catalyst to performance and productivity. Whether you're sat at your desk right now or on the move, get ready to listen, get ready to invest your time and take action straight after. I'm Anna Reddy. Let's get ready to make small steps to leap health. So welcome to the podcast today, and this is going to be fascinating because this is a topic that I've never explored in great depth before, and this is all around IBS and the FODMAP diet. So I'm really, really excited to be introducing to you Bea from Bea's Kitchen. Bea is a female entrepreneur, she's an IBS sufferer, and she's also a mum. Bea was diagnosed with IBS in 2015 after years of suffering with debilitating symptoms. She was put on medication, told to look into the low FODMAP diet, and sent on away. Maybe because time is limited to exploit all those simple lifestyle interventions that you can make. However, through her research, she found that 20% of the population suffered with IBS. And so she knew that she couldn't be the only one that was trying to look for these low FODMAP foods with things that are hard to digest, such as onion and garlic. After all the struggles to find these, this is where Bea's Kitchen was born. So I'm really, really excited to welcome to the podcast today, Bea. Thank you.
Hi, I'm really excited to be here. Thank you.
Super. And that fact around 20% of the population suffering with IBS is massive, isn't it? And when I looked into this a little bit more, it said that any one time, one in eight people are suffering with symptoms. So that just really shows, you know, the severity of the symptoms and how frequent they are if at any time one in eight people are suffering with those symptoms.
Absolutely. There was a study done years and years ago by the IBS network in conjunction with ASDA, and they actually found it was more like one in three people that suffered with some sort of gut disorder, symptom, something along those lines. The 1 in 20 is about people that have actually been diagnosed, but we think there's so many more that are actually suffering.
Yeah, and that's where it's difficult to always get the data, isn't it? Because it's that undiagnosed group that maybe just fumble along thinking I can manage it, but don't actually get that diagnosis. Hopefully today, there might be a few people listening today that think that realise some of the symptoms and start to piece the pictures, the jigsaw together and think, maybe I've got IBS as well. Maybe it's something you can look into a little bit more because, you probably do just the same as me, but talk to people daily that describe symptoms of IBS, but again, haven't always been diagnosed. So before we start going down all different avenues, let's start with the basics there. What exactly is IBS?
So IBS stands for irritable bowel syndrome, and it's a digestive condition that means that your digestive system finds it hard to digest particular food groups, and it causes symptoms anywhere from cramps, bloating, gas, changes in bowel habits. So you might have the constipation side, you might have the diarrhea side. And then those can go on to also affect things like back pain, fatigue, and it's even been linked to mental health. So there's a lot about the gut-brain axis and how connected your brain is to your gut. So, it causes an awful lot of issues. And it's a condition that you're not really born with it, but it can come out of either a severely stressful time in your life, or quite often one of the key reasons that people get IBS is down to food poisoning. So it'll be an imbalance in your gut microbiome caused by the food poisoning, and that's how a lot of people develop IBS.
Interesting. So just to pick up on that, what you said then, so it isn't just something that is going to be with you forever. Your symptoms will vary over time.
Yeah, symptoms vary over time. It's not a curable condition, but it's definitely a manageable one. And some people do manage to heal their guts and get pretty much there of being cured of IBS sometimes. It's like I say, it's not curable, but it's definitely manageable if you've been given the right tools and the right information, and you can manage it yourself well.
Super. And I'm guessing those symptoms are very individual to each person as well. They might have just one of those, might have a combination of those.
All very individual. So in terms of the symptoms, in terms of what triggers your IBS, that's very individual. How you deal with it. And there was a study, there's two girls that I know called Alana and Lisa, who are identical twins, and they did a study which was all about the gut, and it was, I can't remember the stats exactly, but something like their DNA was like 95% the same, being identical twins, but their gut microbiome was only 30% the same. And so it goes to show that even in identical twins, everyone is so individual in their gut, and all sorts of factors will have come into play with that in terms of your lifestyle, your diet, any illnesses you've had, etc. And so it is really, really individual. And I think that's one of the really big challenges of IBS, is that what works for one person probably won't work for the next. And you have to find your own personalized kind of diet and lifestyle plan to help manage it.
Definitely. And that's often the case, isn't it, with lots of different disease and complications, is that there's not one size fits all. There's not one magical cure. No. It's often about empowering yourself with all that information to be able to cherry pick and steer your own journey. And that is, again, what I really try to do, and what you're really trying to do as well, is empower people with that information to be able to steer their own journey, just as you did when you got sent home from the doctor and you were completely overwhelmed with, where am I going to find out about what I do next? But it's just about really being active in terms of getting to the root cause and causes, maybe, of how you are feeling. Thank you for delving a little bit more into that. In terms of going back to that bit around medication, so you said you've been to see the doctor. What types of typical medications are prescribed for IBS?
So there were two that I were given and that I know are given regularly. One the particular one I was given was called amitriptyline, but it's basically an antidepressant, which is used for all manner of different things. One from depression to then IBS to menopause and hot flushes and things. So it's a bit of a catch-all kind of medication. But the idea behind it is that it stops those pain triggers between your gut and your brain, and so it helps you manage that, and it sort of suppresses those feelings. So that's one that they gave me. And then the other one is an antispasmodic. So the idea is that it helps to stop the spasms in your bowel that cause a lot of the sort of cramps and bloating and gas and things. It sometimes works, it sometimes doesn't. It's kind of one of those. The two combined can help. I think the thing for me was I didn't really want to be on medication long term, so I was looking at other ways to try and manage it. But those are the two types of medication that they often prescribe with IBS.
And the antidepressant one, we could probably do a full podcast on, couldn't we?
Absolutely.
We talk about the gut-brain axis and how the two are really interlinked, and maybe, treating the gut could have an impact on the brain, and could potentially prevent some medications being needed to prescribe if you really focus on nourishing your gut. And again, you mentioned the menopause, and there's a lot of publicity at the moment around antidepressants being misprescribed in menopause. And if you haven't had those depressive symptoms before, maybe question if you do need that antidepressant or whether it's the deficiency in hormones. And but again, that's a healthcare professional's bag, so let's keep focused on where we're going today without getting going down any rabbit holes. So yes, that gives a bit of an idea around the medication. But like you said, you didn't really want to go on medication. Some people might have to go on it, but you can also still use those lifestyle interventions as well. So let's now move on to the FODMAP diet. You said that you were told to go on a low FODMAP diet. Some people might have heard of this, they might not. So let's really start with the basics. Could you tell us what the FODMAP diet is? And there's some long words involved in this, I think, isn't there?
There is, yes. I mean, I can spell it out, so, and it's not going to mean anything to anyone. But so FODMAP stands for fermentable oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols. So like I said, not going to mean anything to anyone. But the diet was scientifically proven to help reduce IBS symptoms. And so the way it works is that they've identified four different groups of foods. So you've got your polyols, which are things like your artificial sweeteners and things. You've got your lactose, you've got your fructose, and then you've got your oligosaccharides. And people will be most likely intolerant to at least one of those groups. They could be very unlucky and be intolerant to all four at different levels. So the idea behind the diet is that you go on an elimination diet. So you take out all foods that are moderate and high in all of those four groups from your diet completely for 2 to 4 weeks. Really quite difficult to do. And the big piece of advice to say here is that this is not a long-term thing to do. So one of the worst things you can do for your gut is go on a long-term elimination diet of any sort. So taking out food, whole food groups, and having a lack of variety in your diet. So you only do this for 2 to 4 weeks. And if you find that your symptoms improve, then you know that there is something within those groups that is causing you your IBS symptoms. And so then you go into reintroduction stage. And so that is where you start with each of those different groups, and you'll try and introduce a food into your diet. So you might try and introduce some milk into your diet for the lactose test. And you do it across 3 days, and you do just small amounts and realistic amounts as well. So, you know, when you come to test maybe garlic, you know, don't go and put in half of garlic into your meal, you know, amounts that you would genuinely eat in your diet. That's what you want to be testing. And you note down your symptoms and whether it's triggered for you. And then you slowly move on, and you move on to the next groups. And so the idea is that by the end of it, you have a personalized diet. So you know what groups of foods cause you some symptoms, and you know what groups of foods don't. And then of the ones that do cause you symptoms, you make a decision on whether it was bad enough that you want to remove that from your diet completely, or whether actually it caused me a little bit of bloating, but actually that's tolerable, and I want to continue eating that group of foods or that type of food in your diet. And so you end up with a personalized diet, and it might be that you can. So personally for me, I can have a bit of cow's milk in a cup of tea. You know, I'm not completely intolerant to it. But if I go and try and have like a massive ice cream or full milkshake, I know I'm going to suffer with some pain. So you find your own levels of the foods in the different groups. So that's a little bit about the FODMAP diet and how you go on the diets. But the foods that are high in those areas, if you are sensitive to them, they basically they're hard to digest in your gut. So they ferment in your gut, which causes the gas, which then causes the bloating, which causes the cramps trying to move through your bowels. The bloating then can cause you the back pain because you're all just crammed in your body, and it causes the constipation or the diarrhea and the different bowel habits. So it's about finding what ones of the foods your bowel and your gut is sensitive to that's causing you those symptoms.
Thank you. That was an amazing description and really, really detailed and really, really easy to understand. So thank you for that. And I'm sure all the people listening will have found that really, really beneficial, that clarification. Some picks on there that I wanted to pick on that I loved how you said, you know, the gut doesn't like us excluding lots of things. So like you said, it's not a long-term thing, and you've probably got to be advised to do it. It may be a bit cautious if you don't know what you're doing. Make sure that you really understand it. But the gut does love variety of the right kind. So lots of nutrient-dense things. But you know, the gut's got lots and lots of bacteria that need lots and lots of different foods. So it's good to have a mixture of those. But in this case, we're really finding out that personalised individual approach, which I love as well. And yeah, the gut is sensitive. So like you were saying, you know, you probably wouldn't just go off the elimination thing and go, right, I'll have loads and loads of garlic, because you might have a flare up after that. So you've got to be really sensitive. And this is the same for people who maybe think, right, I need to increase my fibre, or you've got a really, really poor, really processed diet, and then just go on eating loads and loads and loads of vegetables. Your gut's going to react, because you've got to do everything very gradual, haven't you? And over time, you know, building up that amount of fiber could be really, really useful, but you can't go from zero to lots and lots. So yeah, it's that progression, isn't it? And the other thing I picked up on as well is that I'm so glad you can have some cow's milk in a cup of tea, because cow's milk just does not cut the mustard in a cup of tea, does it?
It doesn't. I've tried so many times and I can't, and tried every different type of milk, and it's just not the same.
It's not, is it? It's not. And yeah, probably for a mum as well in the morning, you just need a good cup of tea to bring you around, don't you? So
absolutely,
it's not the same with any other type of milk. Coffee possibly, but not tea. So we've gone through like the process of it. What about all the different types? So you mentioned the different groups. What are some of the foods which fall into those groups, so that people can just get an understanding of the different types of foods that they might eliminate during this diet? Yeah.
So your oleosaccharides are where your onions, garlics, leeks, all of that kind of the allium food group. Yeah. And lots of other foods, but that's one of the main groups, and one of the main groups that people struggle with, actually. So garlic and onion are two of the foods that a lot of people struggle to reintroduce. Some people do find that like cooked onion is worse, and actually having some raw red onion in a salad or something they can tolerate. Other people are completely opposite, so it is so personalized. But so that's that food group. Loads of different sort of vegetables and things fall into there. And then you've got your lactose, which is your milk, it's your dairy. So you can test with different milks, cheeses, yogurts, that sort of thing. Then you've got your polyols, which are basically your artificial sweeteners. So on the back of packets that you'll find in the supermarkets, you'll find a lot of words ending in OL. So there's sorbitols, mannitols, all sorts of things. But they tend to be basically artificial sweeteners, and that's the main part of the polyols group. And then what's the fourth one? Fructose. So then you've got your fructose, which is mainly in your fruits. So there's lots of fruits that are really high in fructose. You do get some vegetables that are and other foods, but there'll be certain fruits, a lot of stone fruits, so your peaches, your nectarines, your plums are quite high in fructose, so a lot of those go during elimination, and then you try and bring them back in different quantities. So those are some of the groups. My best piece of advice, if you're looking at this, though, is to look at the Monash University app. So Monash University are the people that researched this diet and scientifically proved it to work. And they have an app which I still use today, however many years on we are now, 9 years on. And it's it breaks down all the different foods. And they updated it a couple of years ago where it's now got a traffic light system based on different quantities. So it's not just a all or nothing. It's saying, okay, you could have this quantity is really safe and this quantity is moderate. So it gives you opportunities to say, okay, I could go a little bit higher and probably still be okay. Or I could try the moderate serve and see if that's, you know, works with me, because maybe the high serving size doesn't. So it's really, really good for that, to help you get as much variety back as you can by giving you different serving size options and telling you, sorry, this is the most important part, it tells you what it's moderate or high in out of the different groups. So if you know that actually it's only lactose and fructose, for example, you can see the foods that are moderate or high in those, but the ones that are moderate or high in the others, well, you should be absolutely fine with, because you've reintroduced those and that works. So it's really good at breaking all of that down for you to get the most variety back.
Amazing. Well, we'll link a show note to that, a link to it in the show notes, sorry, so that people can access that. Because as you're discussing these, you know, I'm thinking there's lots and lots of nutrients in some of the things that we're missing out, that we need to make sure that we're getting from somewhere else. So if you've got that information there, you can see what is an alternative, because it's quite complex, isn't it, in terms of some fruits that you could have, some fruits that you couldn't have, and some types of dairy that you could have, and then there's others that are actually not too bad, aren't they, in that
case. Yes, yeah.
So being empowered with that information will enable you to still have a nutrient-dense diet without one that's going to be aggravating your IBS.
Yes, absolutely.
Wonderful, wonderful. That will be really, really valuable. So we chatted a little bit around pregnancy. This came up when we had a little discussion a few weeks ago, and you said that you and your friend had noticed that your symptoms improved in pregnancy. And I started thinking, because I do a lot of work around menopause, and during menopause, this is a key time when IBS can kick in, maybe, you know, because of the drop in hormones. I was thinking during the pregnancy time, your estrogen levels are really, really high, aren't they? That's maybe why the IBS symptoms improved. So I've had a little bit of a look into the research for this, and it is very, very mixed and, again, individualised. Some people do see an improvement in symptoms, whereas other people can see a worsening in symptoms. Maybe because there's a lot of pressure around the pelvic area. Symptoms of heartburn as well. But the data is mixed. So what are your thoughts around this, Bear?
I think definitely, I think the hormone changes, because I think a lot of people also suffer more with their IBS around the time of their period as well. So I think there is definitely something where the hormones are playing a big part, and that goes to say about the menopause as well. So I think that is a big part. Possibly the reason why some people suffer more or don't when they're pregnant, and this is what I wondered about myself, is that, I mean, I've always wanted children, and I didn't meet my partner until I was in my 30s. And so it'd been a long time waiting to be able to have a child. And so becoming pregnant, I was going to do anything I could to be as healthy and keep that baby as safe as I could. And so I think the focus on my health during that time, and also on one of the biggest triggers of IBS outside of food is stress. And I was trying to keep my stress at a minimum so that I wasn't affecting my blood pressure and affecting the baby. And also I was naturally less stressed because I was going through a time where I was so excited that I was going to become a mum, and this, you know, this life stage was finally happening for me. And I think that all of that played a big part in it as well. So the reduction of stress, the kind of happy serotonin hormones, the change in other hormones, I think all of them contributed to my IBS basically disappearing. And my I'm probably going back to the whole gut brain thing. My brain was focused far more on growing this baby and doing whatever I could to keep it safe, that it wasn't maybe noticing the gut pains or thinking about those. It was completely focused elsewhere. I don't have a scientific answer, but I think those are what I gained from my looking back at my pregnancy and why it might have been.
I think it sounds pretty scientific to me, Bea. I think it sounds quite compelling, does that? I think it is. It is really, really true. You know, stress is the cause of lots and lots of different things, isn't it? But this really, again, reinforces the difficulty it is to find just that root cause, or really, you know, do studies that are a true reflection of everyone, because everyone's world is so individualized, isn't it?
And yes.
Everyone's lifestyles are so individualized. You could run a study, but each of those individuals are doing different things in the lifestyle. They've got different environmental things going on. They've got different ways of living. So all those different things are going to impact on those study results, aside of the actual thing that you're looking at. So yeah, I think that just really raises the awareness that we can't, it's not one size fits all, and it is often going on, what's going on in your life and the lifestyle interventions that you're making as well. So part of that introduction, you know, after you'd been sent home from the doctors, you were going to look for a FODMAP diet, and you're a bit baffled with, where do I find this low FODMAP food? That entrepreneur was inside you, thought a little bit more, and they came up with the idea of developing foods that were low in the FODMAP, and that's when Bea's Kitchen was born. So tell us a bit more about that journey. Let's take a turn in this conversation and tell us a bit more about how Bea's Kitchen was born.
Yeah, sure. So when I started going and researching the diet and realizing there are all these foods I was meant to take out of my diet for a matter of weeks. And I was living on my own and working long hours in a marketing agency. So making all these meals from scratch was, you know, impossible, basically. It just wasn't going to happen. And so I was looking in the supermarkets, and I'd spend hours in there looking at the back of packs of everything and using my app and looking. And I was like, you know, it was impossible, basically, to try and find convenient foods to eat, particularly to add a variety in as well. So if I might manage to find one or two things I could eat, but I couldn't eat those for three meals a day for the next 4 weeks. And so I did start to try and make some of my own bits at home when I could. And so I made some pasta sauces and things. And not being a chef at all, never been, you know, massively great in the kitchen, I managed to make some things that actually tasted quite good, because I was using lots of other different herbs and spices and things, and pretty much any other thing you can use other than onion and garlic, which are used to flavour so many foods. And so I realized, well, actually, it can be done. It does actually taste really good. And it's funny, after you take those flavors out of your diet, you realize just how much they mask everything else and how much flavor is missing from your diet, because all these convenient sort of sauces and ready meals and condiments and stocks and everything are all packed with things like onion and garlic, because they're really cheap. Really good flavorants, and onion is a really cheap bulking agent. So most sauces you'll find there's a good amount of onion in there to bulk it out and add that flavor. So doing that, I realized, well, actually, I can make these really nice tasting things, and you don't have to have any of these hard to digest things. And look, there's, you know, one in five people are suffering with IBS, more with other conditions that this could help to. And so I was like, well, if we need these, I need to make these. And I'd always wanted to run my own business, but I'd never known what. And so this idea came out, and then it was actually my sister that pushed me to do it. And she had my nephew, was quite young at the time, and she was weaning him. And I think I'd got an email or something from Ella's Kitchen about the founder, Paul Linley. And so she started looking into him for some reason and realised that he was an accountant by trade. He'd come up with this great food idea, no experience in the food industry whatsoever, but researched it, made it happen and had a phenomenally successful business. And so she turned to me and said, well, if he can do it, why can't you? And that was the push that made me do it. So, yeah, it's all down to her, really, of making me make the leap.
Oh, wonderful. And that is often when you've got an idea and want to do something, it's other people believing you, isn't it, as well? Sometimes
yes.
That can make all the difference. So
yes.
If you've got someone out there now that wants to do something and you believe in them, just tell them, because it
tell
does
them, tell them. Because otherwise you think,
difference.
Oh, no, that's such a silly idea, I shouldn't do that. But if someone tells you, no, that's a good idea, then, it does make all the difference.
Yeah, that ceiling removes. You know, the possibilities are endless if other people show you that they believe in you as well. So, so well done to your sister. and you, of course. But, yeah, that is really... you know, interesting how like onions and garlic are just the base of everything, like traditional
everything.
Soup, it's traditional bolognese, it's always the base of everything. And sometimes it can just be our ignorance that we haven't delved into different kinds of herbs and spices and understand how to use them a little bit more. And I guess that's what you've become an expert in. But yeah, going back to like when your daughter was weaning, thinking there's lots of children as well that don't always like that onion and garlicky flavour, isn't there?
Yeah.
What you're producing could actually be beneficial for them as well.
Yeah,
that's a really inspiring story. So again, anyone listening now who's got itchy feet and think, could I do something? Or think about their story and look at where you are today. So tell us a bit more about what you make. I mean, I've looked at your Instagram, and when you just said then used to be marketing, I can see from your Instagram. So I've visited your Instagram, it's absolutely fab, and you've got loads of recipes on there, haven't you? Then you make pasta look super exciting. There's one with feta which looks amazing that you put feta in first, and pasta looks delicious. Tell us where can we find you on Instagram? What is it, just Bay's Kitchen?
Bay's Kitchen UK, we are on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. And then bayskitchen.com is our website. And so we make our kind of hero products are our stirring sauces. They're what we launch first and are our best sellers. But up there with them are our concentrated stocks. Particularly our chicken one does really well, but our vegetable one is a really good seller. And it's because it doesn't contain onion. Like if you try and buy a vegetable a vegan or vegetarian gravy or stock that doesn't contain onion, let me know if there are any others out there, because that's what we keep getting told, is that they love our product because it's not onion based. And there's actually a lot of people out there who we've met along the journey who just don't like like you're saying about their kids, but they just don't like the flavour of onion. It's not that they're intolerant to it. And the same with garlic. And so we get a lot of people that buy our stocks and our gravies because of that. So we make ready-made gravies. They are a seasonal product. So I think we've run out of chicken gravy, this year. So it'll be back in stock in September. And then we make condiments. So we've got vegan garlic infused mayonnaise. So this is an interesting one, that you can have garlic infused oil. The FODMAPs aren't soluble in oil, but they are in water. So you can put garlic, whole garlic cloves in oil to get the flavour and the smell from it. And it isn't triggering. So as long as there's not actual pieces of garlic used when, you know, in an oil, as long as it says it's infused with, then that is actually safe. So we've made a garlic infused mayonnaise, which is very popular to get that flavour back for people. So a ketchup, a barbecue, that we've got a tomato chutney, we've got salsa, and then we've got we launched some pestos, I think that was last year. which are really popular, and they're vegan pestos as well. So they don't contain the usual cheese that goes into pesto. I'm trying to think what else. We've got, yeah, it's a range of 26 products. So yeah, we've got quite a few. We do also have, so if you are starting out on the low FODMAP diet, or you think you've got IBS and want to sort of track your food intake before you go and see your GP, because a lot of GPs will turn around and say, well, have you got a food diary? Tell me, you know, show me what's going on. So we have made a food and symptom diary. And so you can track all of your food, your medication, your sleep, your alcohol, your bowel habits, everything that they might want to know about. So we also sell that one on our website as well.
Gosh, lots of things. And lots of things that you mentioned are things that would take a lot of time to create from scratch. And often getting nutrients in is always about speed in the busy world that we're in, isn't it? So if it's,
yes,
if you've got an easy stock to go to, then you can make quite a nutritious meal easily. And if things aren't easy, that's when we often go for the less nutritious options, isn't it, in a rush. So it's all about creating that ease, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted it to be the convenient foods. That was my aim. We really focus on taste as well. I was always against the, you know, anything that's free from something, or you know, had ingredients removed and is for a particular diet and stuff. I was like, well, you've compromised enough, so you should be able to still have really good tasting foods. We really focus on that, and we enter lots of awards for that. I've completely lost what I was about to say. We focus on branding as well, because I also think that you should be able to buy from a nice brand, be able to pick up a jar that actually looks nice, and it's not about the medical side or anything else. It's about enjoying food again. And then, but it's all about bringing flavour back into your diet. So with our products, they are completely FODMAP friendly, so they don't have any moderate or high FODMAP ingredients, but they're designed to go with foods or make dishes that are suitable for you. So where we go back to that whole personalized thing, with our stirring sauces, for example, if you can have certain vegetables that may be high in FODMAP, but you've managed to reintroduce them, add them in with the sauce. But it just means that you've got that base amount of flavor, and then you can do, you know, all manner of different things with it, based on what your personalized diet has come up with.
Super. So where, in terms of where your products are, where they can be found, where can people buy them from? I know you've got your website, but where are they stocked? Where else are they stocked, please?
So other than that, we've got, they're all on Amazon. So you can get them there. We are also, 18 of our range, so a good amount now, are on Ocado. So you can order that with your weekly shop. And then we are in lots of independent kind of health food stores and things. So, just odd places around the country, some farm shops and garden centres and things like that. So, the three main ones online are our website, Ocado, and Amazon.
Amazing. So look out when you're in nice little farm shops and garden centres for Bay's Kitchen. Bay, we're coming to a bit of a close now. In terms of like any top tips you've got, we're going to go down two avenues here. The first one is in terms of, you know, your IBS and the FODMAP. What top tips have you got for anyone who's got IBS and thinking about the FODMAP diet?
So definitely the food and symptom diary. You need to work out your personal triggers. It's going to be different to everyone else. If you're going to go down the FODMAP route, I would highly, highly recommend to speak to a trained dietitian or nutritionist to really just help you with getting that variety, making sure that you're not lacking in, you know, a lot of nutrients and things. So that I would, if you can, please try and do that, or ask your GP to refer you if they can. And then I think the other tip is just to remember, it's not all about food. So food is one part, but there are many other lifestyle factors that go into into IBS and kind of related symptoms, and those include things like sleep. So getting quality sleep does our bodies a world of good. So if you're not getting good quality sleep, then that could be a trigger. Stress, as we've mentioned lots about, that's a huge trigger for symptoms. Exercise, so just, you know, keeping your body moving, it's all the kind of, you know, back to basics of health and well-being, but exercise really does actually help IBS. It doesn't have to be, you know, crazy intense. Sometimes that doesn't help, but, you know, just a walk every day, swimming, yoga, Pilates, all of those are really good. And then just to keep an eye on, you know, alcohol intake, caffeine intake, medication, that sort of thing, because those things can affect it too. So it's just being mindful of all the other factors that can go into our how our bodies are reacting.
Thank you. Great top tips to take away there. And yeah, the lifestyle interventions that you talked about, maybe go back to, you'll often hear listeners hear about the READY acronym, but quick go-to, R for rest, recovery, recharge, E for eating well, A for activity, D for your distraction management to minimise your stress, and Y is all about you. So make sure really individualised to your world. And you've talked about those all beautifully there. So in terms of your entrepreneur journey and inspiring other people to follow in your footsteps, what would be your top tips now to anyone thinking about it or on that journey right now?
As we mentioned before, just do it, get on and do it. If you've been thinking about it and you know you've got a good idea, do it. You need to make sure that you've got tons of resilience and determination. The amount of times I could have given up along the journey, there are a lot of challenges in the way. So just make sure that you've got that determination. You need to have a real, real passion for what you're doing, why you're doing it. Otherwise hurdles will hit and you probably will give up. So make sure you've got that determination and passion. And just not be what's the word? Like, don't be blindsided by what you kind of see of entrepreneurs and you know, things on Dragon's Den and stuff like that. It's hard work. And most, this was a stat I heard the other day, most overnight success businesses are actually 10 years in the making. So it might look like it's suddenly come out of nowhere and is now turning over millions of pounds and things, but there will be, on average, 10 years behind a business before it gets to that stage. We're only in year six, so we've still got, you know, years to go to become that massive overnight success. So it's very rare that it, you know, you come up with an idea and it suddenly works in your first year and you're, you know, making tons of money and things. So just, yeah, be realistic about your expectations of it, and make sure you're doing it for the right reasons.
Very authentic and honest and absolutely bob on. I was only listening to a podcast this morning where someone who's really successful had said, you know, everyone comes up to me and says, oh, you've done it so easily, but they weren't following her on social media for those years before when she was having so many setbacks and gave up on lots and lots of different businesses along the way until she got to find the one that really, really worked. So like you said, you do need a lot of resilience, but you need that passion as well. So, and I think that's certainly come out from our discussion today that you've got both of those based. So thank you very much for that insight and information into IBS, but also your journey as a successful entrepreneur. So thank you very much. Is there anything I've missed out before we go, or where you want to ask listeners to find you?
No, I don't think so. No, thank you so much for having me on. It's been great chatting with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. So before you stop listening, I want you to pause. What did you take away from the podcast today? What small steps will you start? And what did you hear that you know could help someone else to make small steps to lead their health, well-being, productivity and performance? Please do share this episode and please subscribe to the podcast. And remember that Leap Health are here to provide workplace health, wellbeing and performance workshops, one-to-one coaching and bespoke corporate solutions to help the world make small steps to Leap Health, wellbeing, productivity and performance. Please do get in touch with Anna at leaphealth.co.uk. Have a great day.